Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first wave, first chapter. We're hearing about the characteristics of Uttam Bhakti. There are six characteristics. And at each stage of devotion, two of these characteristics manifest to different degrees. At the stage of Sadhana Bhakti, then one experiences Klesha Agni, or Kleshagni, and Shubhada. So he's describing this Kleshagni, how this suffering is destroyed, and then he explains the source of suffering. Suffering is caused by basically avidya, ignorance. And because of ignorance, we have the wrong idea about our identity. We think we're the body. And then when we have the wrong idea, then we engage in the wrong actions. And those wrong actions give reactions, and those wrong actions are called sin, and then or papam, and then they give us reaction. Or even if we have the idea that we're the body, which is also the wrong idea, and we do good actions, they also give us reactions. That's called punya, and that's also a cause of suffering. Either way, we suffer. So he's explained that suffering is threefold, due to sinful reaction, the seed of sin, and ignorance. Then in the next text he says, first, sinful reactions will be discussed. There are two types of sinful reactions. One is called aprarabdham and prarabdham. So prarabdham means that which is happening now. The word prarabdham means happening now. And aprarabdham means it's not happening. Sometimes we say it's not happening. Is it happening? It's not happening. So these sins that we're experiencing right now in this life are called prarabdha. And aprarabdha means they're there. They're stockpiled inside our hearts. But they will happen in next life. Next verse, he says, this is from 11th canto. Itagni, this is 11th canto, verse chapter 14, verse 19. Itagni susamidharchi karotya damsi basmasat tata madvishaya bhaktir udavai namsi krishnasha. This is an example of how aprarabdha reactions are destroyed. This is from Uddhav Gita. Krishna's telling, my dear Uddhav, devotional service and relationship with me is like a blazing fire that can burn to ashes all the fuel of sinful activities supplied to it. So this, all the fuel means in our heart there are so many stored sins at different stages, kutam and bijam and aprarabdham. And they're like pieces of wood in this analogy. And bhakti is like a fire. Even they say that, fire of bhakti. He's in the fire. He's in the fire of bhakti. He's absorbed. And devotional service itself acts like a fire to burn up all these sins. So that's why it's called Kleshagni, because the suffering is due to sins, and when the sins are burned up, there's no more suffering. And Jiva Goswami comments, a blazing fire used for cooking and other purposes turns wood sticks to ashes. So bhakti, Krishna bhakti, in the form of actions such as hearing about me, burns up all sins which will be committed. And then there's a footnote here. It says, if the sinful acts have just been committed, the reaction will be in the future, aprarabdha. So any actions we've done in this life, they have a reaction. And that reaction will come in the future life. And that name of that reaction, or that group of sins and reactions, is called aprarabdha. So then, it's very interesting, because some people, they say, on this discussion, they say, how is it when you get diksha, then there's no more sins. Sins stop. And diksha means, the word diksha means that you get transcendental knowledge. Guru gives you knowledge. And what is that knowledge? You begin to think and identify that I'm Atma, that I'm a soul, that I'm Krishna's eternal servant, and I should serve him. And with that knowledge, we get some discrimination and we get some determination. that I'm going to act on this platform. I'm going to act as a devotee. I'm not going to break these principles which are given by Guru, four principles. And when one acts like a devotee and he uses his discrimination, there's no more sins. Because sins are based on avidya. Avidya means I think I'm the body, and then I engage in bodily activities, and then that produces that we invariably end up committing sins. So it's, some people think it's some magical thing that all the sins stop. It's not. It's a choice, actually. As soon as you choose to follow the path of bhakti and live on the path of the soul, then there's no more sins. Because the sins are only related to the body. Because they say, how is it possible when you get initiated, all the sins stop, all sins are finished? Simple. You act on the principle that I'm not the body. You get the knowledge. Yes, I receive this knowledge. I've studied Gita, I've taken Diksha, and in the mantras that I've been given by Guru, I've attained realization and conviction, and now forever, no more sins. That's it. There's no more sins for a devotee. As long as he allows himself to slip into ignorance, if ignorance overcomes him, he thinks, well, actually I'm the body and I can enjoy, that's ignorance. Then he can engage in sin. That means he's forgetting Guru, he's forgetting Krishna. As long as we stay on a platform of knowledge of our identity, it's a matter of independence. Because a devotee means that he gives up his independence. I'm not the enjoyer, I'm the servant. And we always exist in the consciousness that I'm the servant, and there's no more sin. It's finished. Very simple. And then whatever's still lying there and dormant, stockpiling and kutam or bijam, that's all getting burned up by the practice of bhakti. But when the consciousness changes by the understanding of our identity, we give up our independence and act as a dependent person, as a servant of the Lord, there's no more sins. Sins are finished. Sometimes out of humility, devotees say, oh, I'm such a sinner, I'm so fallen. Well, that's nice mood, but the devotee's not a sinner, there's no more sins. What is a sin? He's only serving Krishna day and night. And anything that's left is all finished, and that's going to be brought out here. This is kind of a summary. In verse 21, he says, now this verse we're talking about aparabdha, that just bhakti itself burns to ashes sinful activities and reactions that we'll experience even in future lives. So then he says, parabdha haratvam. And this is a verse from third canto, chapter 33, verse 6. Yanama deye shavanan ukirtanat yat pravanad yat smaranat api kuchit shvado pisadya savanaya kalpate kutapunaste bhagavan nudarshanat. Now this verse proves how parabdha is destroyed. So the previous verse proves how practice of bhakti burns up aparabdha. Aparabdha are sins that we've committed in last life, and then the reactions we are supposed to get, but not in this life, but next life. This karma is very complicated. It extends over many, many lifetimes. This one definition, they say that this aparabdha means the effects will be experienced in future life. So now the parabdha, which we're experiencing in this life, this is told here in third canto, translation. To say nothing of the spiritual advancement of persons who see the Supreme Person face to face, even a person born in a family of dog eaters immediately becomes eligible to perform Vedic sacrifices if he once utters the holy name of Krishna, or he chants about him, or hears about his pastimes, offers obeisances, or even remembers him. So all the faults of our, we're experiencing parabdha just by chanting the holy name once, that's all eliminated. Because we're born in a certain situation, that's called a parabdha. If we're born a dog eater, we're born into the family of dog eaters. Because in India, 500 years ago, even 1,000 years ago, people are eating dogs. It's too bad this group of people doesn't exist anymore. we would give them a free house in Vrindavan. I would give them room. I would pay their electricity bill and everything. Let them live in Radhakund and eat all the dog mahaprasad they want, you know. Because these are like devotee dogs. So No one would disagree with that. But somehow these dog eaters, they migrated to China and other places because there may be better dog over there or something. The dogs here got too skinny or something. So the dog eaters, they live over in Taiwan, and Taiwan's full of dog eaters. And you get dog burgers, and that's where the hot dogs come from. So now if you're born in a family of dog eaters, it's called Chandala. That's why did that happen? That's called Parabdha. That's the fall. Your last life, you committed sins, and then those sins which you committed, then you get a certain type of body. You're born in a certain varna, Janmaishvarya Shuta Shribir. You get a certain type of birth in a certain varna and a certain ashram, or you may be able to enter a certain ashram. You know, certain learning, a certain beauty, certain lifespan. It's all due to karma, previous life. So this is called Parabdha. It's happening right now in this life. It's happening, whatever we did. So it's happening. I was born in a family of dog eaters, Chandala. It was very low class. So that's a result of our Parabdha. But here, and this, these are the teachings, I assume this is Kapila's teachings in third canto, he's saying all these faults of karma, which are Parabdha, immediately can be changed. So your Parabdha, which is fructified and given you the birth, that's the result of Parabdha, which is happening in this life, has given you the birth in a low family. But by contacting Krishna, by chanting his name, by serving him, that fault of Parabdha is eliminated. And you become a Brahmin. That's what he's saying. Just like it says, there's one verse that is bell metal is turned to gold by an alchemical process. Somehow if you combine bell metal with mercury, if you can do it, if you can melt, because when you melt mercury or when you boil mercury, then it evaporates. So if you melt bell metal into liquid, and then you add mercury, which is liquid, and you boil them, then the mercury disappears. But somehow if you can combine them, the principle is there, it's called alchemy. You can make gold. Prabhupada explained in the Vedas they had another system for making gold. Is that a yogi would drink mercury. Obviously you have to be a yogi, because if you're not a yogi and you touch a drop of mercury, then you'll become a margi, or whatever, marogi. You'll be dead. You'll be finished, because mercury it'll kill you. But a yogi, somehow they could drink the mercury, and then they would get some copper coins. Prabhupada says copper coins, because gold, these metals like bell metal, copper and gold, if you look at them, if you analyze them according to chemistry, they're just some different arrangements of molecules. One has more molecules of carbon or sulfur. It's like this. It's a chemical. The chemical structure of these metals are very, very similar. So the whole theory is by manipulating, combining these different metals, we can change the structure and create a third one, which is actually a fact, if you can do it. So the yogi would drink the mercury, and he would get gold, he would get some copper coins, and he would urinate on those copper coins. So urine is ammonia, NH2. So the NH2 and then the mercury, and then that combined with copper coins, then the copper coins would turn into gold. Prabhupada tells us on one tape, you can hear in folio. So we don't, Prabhupada said, and then it was a morning walk, and then some devotee said, well, Prabhupada, we can make a lot of gold this way for the BBT. Because, you know, and then Prabhupada said, yes, but, you know, can you become such a yogi? You know, to drink mercury, because as soon as you drink it, you're finished. So this is, of course, Nimai Pandit, whenever Mother Shachi was feeling some pinch for money, she had to buy some sabji or fruits, and she didn't have, her husband wasn't giving her money or whatever. There was some shortage of money, then Nimai would go out in the jungle, and he would collect some imli bij, some seeds from the tamarind tree, and he would bring them back, and he said, Mother, look, I collected these seeds from the imli tree. And he had it in his hand. And she said, yeah, what is that? But how can... She, and he said, no, you can buy some vegetables with this, whatever you need. And she said, Nimai, this is only some imli bij. She said, no, put out your hand. And then she put out her hand, and he put it in her hand, and it turned into gold coins. And she looked at her hand, oh my God, I have a handful of gold coins. I mean, one gold coin 500 years ago can buy like a house full of rice or a whole, you know, huge amount of food. So then she would think, how is my boy doing this? This is amazing. Anyway, he can do so many things. Because, you know, she's in Madhurya. She's in this called Shuddhavatsalya. So there's no idea that she can think that my son is God or Narayan or he's a yogi or he's using mystic power. He's using Prapti Siddhi, and he's extending his hand to the Fort Knox in America and taking some gold coins out of Fort Knox or the Federal Reserve of India or whatever they call it. No, he just goes in the yard and picks a few seeds off the ground, and so he really makes Sai Baba look bad, you know. Because Sai Baba supposedly can, you know, do some magic and make a gold ring come out of his ear or something like that. Whatever. So in this way, you're born as a dog eater, but by contact with Krishna, the Prarabdha gets transformed. Mukha kavitakari yansabari smarani pangugiri tari deki lange. What is it? Lange tari. Then andatari gan. Andatari. Let's see. Andat dekatari gan. There's one verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that says mukha kavitakari. That one may be a murk. One may be a fool. And he can't think of anything, but he can become a great poet. Murka Kavitakari, Yan Sabara Smarani. Sabara Smarani. If one remembers Gauranga with everyone else, if he remembers the Pancha Tattva, Lord Gauranga, Nityananda, Dvaita, Garadhar, and Srivas, then a fool can become a great poet. Then, says, Murka Kavitakari, Yan Sabara Smarani, Pangogiri Lange Deki. It says, Pangogiri Lange Deki. It says, that someone who is a pangu, someone who's crippled or lame or has a broken leg, he can lange giri, he can cross over mountains. Like Giriraj is a mountain. He can get the power to cross over the mountain. And then it says anda taragana deki. One may be blind, anda jana. But taragan, he can deki, it's Bengali, he can see all the group of stars. Like sakigan means group, so tara means star. All the constellations he can see. So how is this possible? Because by his karma, by birth, he's blind. Or he's a fool. Or he's lame. But by the gatana agatana patiyasi shakti, the power of the Lord to make the impossible possible, then it's possible. So this is what Kapila Muni is telling his mother, that bhakti is so powerful that it even destroys prarabdha. And this is Shiva Goswami's commentary. In this verse from Bhagavatam, there is the word shwa da. Shwa means dog eaters. This refers to a person who possesses the nature of eating low food, like a carnivorous animal. And if the verse were to refer to the remembrance of the Lord's name as atonement for the accidental eating of dog flesh. It's a whole long thing here. He goes into the Sanskrit back and forth. But what he's basically saying is that because it's singular and plural and all these different things, the actual word of the verse is indicating that it doesn't just mean that somehow someone may be a Brahmin or he may be a Kshatriya, or actually maybe a Brahmin, but incidentally or occasionally he may go somewhere and someone says, oh, eat some of this. And then he says, so it's very good. What is it? He says, it's dog. He says, dog? I'm a Brahmin. Why did you feed me this? Oh, you know, it's our custom. Whenever we have a guest, we give him this dog, you know, dog burger, you know, Bhima burger, hot dog. So then he feels, oh my God, I lost my caste. I have to do some prayaschitta. So then he would say, well, what the best, I should chant the Lord's name. This is the best prayaschitta to restore my purity and return to my brahminical status. So if the verse had a particular, it was swade instead of swada, all these things. If it was, the words were written in a different way, it would mean an occasional purification of an accidental fall down. But because of the particular words that are chosen, the gender of the words and the plurality, whatever they call it, the singular, plural, what is that called? What is that term? If a word is singular or plural, that's the declension or something? I forget. Anyway, but it's all about etymology. So he's saying that actually it means the whole class. It doesn't mean an accidental eating of dog. The whole class of dog eaters. If someone is so fallen, they're born into a family of dog eaters, they're eating dog in the womb, and when they're born, they're eating dog. It's like a kunda dog. I mean, unbroken dog. They're always eating dog. That person who's so fallen that that's his regular fare, that he's eating this thing, he can become his parabdha becomes eliminated. He's no longer a dog eater. He's totally purified of that parabdha, and he's eligible even to perform yajna. By hearing or chanting the name of the Lord, or by bowing down to the Lord, or remembering the Lord, a dog eater quickly destroys his prarabdha karmas of this life, which have produced his low birth, and which prevent him from performing sacrifices. At the same time, by engaging in acts of devotion, he attains the purity, or punya, which creates qualities suitable for performing sacrifices. So he says that although he was a dog eater, which means he has bad qualities and low qualities, but if he contacts Krishna and performs bhakti, he gets all good qualities. He gets all good qualities to the extent he becomes so pure and so peaceful and tolerant and humble that he's and purified, that he's qualified to actually do Vedic yajnas as a Brahmin. But then he explains, this is actually, he gets this quality. But then he says, even then, although this is true, however, even if he's born a Brahmin, which means a good birth, still he has to take Upanayanam with Gayatri Mantra before he can do yajna. So even though one is born as a Brahmin, still he's born as a Brahmin, then he has to have Upanayanam or Brahmin Diksha before he's qualified to do yajna. So now he's trying to explain something here. This produces, then he says, the purified dog eater would also have to undergo similar training in order to perform sacrifice. So this is the contention of Jiva Goswami, his commentary on this, how that bhakti destroys our parabdha, and he cites this as an example. So even though one does become pure by bhakti and it eliminates the disqualification of his birth, he could, technically, he's purified enough to do yajna, but according to the Varnashram Dharma, unless one is born, the laws of that system are, which are given by Krishna, unless one is born in a Brahmin family and he undergoes Upanayanam, he cannot perform a yajna. So even though this dog eater has become, in one sense, more than a Brahmin, because he's a Vaishnava, he's actually a Krishna Bhakta, so some Brahmins may be Mayavadis, so they're not even Vaishnavas, but they're Brahmins, smarta Brahmins. They may be demigod worshippers, but they're born in a Brahmin family because of good karma, and then they take Upanayanam, then they can do yajnas, deva yajnas or whatever. Now this dog eater, if he becomes a devotee, he becomes more qualified, more pure than that smarta Brahmin, because his Ishtadeva is Vishnu, and he's a Vishnu Bhakta, so this is the highest form of faith, or highest expression of faith. But according to the laws of the Varnashram Dharma, although he is so qualified and even more pure and more, you can say, qualified than even a smarta Brahmin, because he's not born in a Brahmin family, he does not have the right to do a Vedic yajna, according to the Varnashram system. That's why when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, whenever he would install deities or do some actual Vedic yajna situation that required a Vedic yajna, he would have his disciples that were Brahmin-born do that yajna, like Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. Although he had many disciples, he gave Brahmin Diksha and to Rikshawalas or anyone, he gave them Brahmin Diksha. And then, and they were even doing puja later, they would do artik in the temple, but the actual yajnas and these homas and all these things for the Grihastha community, his congregational community, they would want to do Garbhadan Samskara, and Namkarana and Vidyakarana and so many different samskaras, Dasavita samskaras. He would not, even though they're his Vaishnav Brahmin disciples, but if they weren't Brahmin born, he would not allow them to do that. Because this is preserving the instructions of the Varnashram system. Because all this Homa and Yajna and Vedic Homas, it's all coming from Varnashram Dharma, from the Varnashram system. So, of course, nowadays we see in ISKCON people that are born Mleshas and Yavanas, they learn some mantras and they do Yajnas. But at least 500 years ago, when this Tika was written by Jiva Goswami, he would not entertain such a thing. And even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he followed this principle of 80 years ago, that all Vedic yajic functions, installations were all done by Brahmins. But in ISKCON we have all kinds of people doing these things. So I'm just reading the commentary. I'm not putting in any of my own commentaries. Because Prabhupada himself, when he installed the deities in Vrindavan, he called in the Ranga Kshetra Brahmins to do a very elaborate installation, because he wanted to have this Vrindavan temple accepted by all the caste Brahmins and Goswamis of Vrindavan. So he did everything pakka. But in the West, deities were installed by anybody. You know, the guy was a sudra, but he came Prabhupada's disciple. Then he would get some bowls from the kitchen and put the deities in the kitchen, you know, mixing bowl, and pour the yogurt on them. Prabhupada himself, when he went to L.A., and he installed Rukmini and Dwarkadish, he said, "So did you buy some snan patra and some new, you know, bowls, because we have to bathe the deities?" Yeah, they would do panchamrit abhishek for installation. Very simple. In half hour, the deities would be installed. And he said, "Oh, Prabhupada, we didn't get anything." And he said, "And there, the deities are there. Everybody's ready. Everyone's waiting for abhishek. Yeah, and there's no new, like, pots or, like, big basin." He said, "All right, bring something from the kitchen." So he just went in the kitchen and got some bowls. They mix up flour, these kind of big stainless bowls type of thing, you know, big basin that put it down. Everything was very makeshift in the West. So for preaching, then we're doing these functions, we're installing deities and we're doing yajnas, and because the ultimate thing is Shuddha Bhakti. But it certainly doesn't have anything to do with Varnashram Dharma. But Jiva Goswami, there's no way 500 years ago he could write a commentary. He said, "Yeah, any rickshawwala that takes Vaishnav Diksha, he can do a Vedic yajna." He would be like tarred and feathered on the spot 500 years ago. But now no one knows one thing from another thing, and the rickshawwalas, they give themselves a surname Sharma and they put on a thread. And I mean, no one knows who's who in this age anyway. But 500 years ago, it was very clear who was who. So, this is his... It's a very interesting distinction. So therefore, so the main thing, the main point of such verses of this is in Kapila Muni's, this is what sometimes, that's why you need guru, because the actual Parokshavad, what is the implied meaning? Because someone just reads this verse and he says, "Look, Kapila Muni is saying that a dog eater, if he becomes Krishna conscious, then he can do yajna. So I'll do yajna." But that's not really what Kapila Muni is what he's saying. What he's saying is that bhakti is so powerful that it destroys Prarabdha to such an extent that a dog eater could even do yajna. He's so pure, his consciousness, he's so purified that Vishnu, that Yajnavai Vishnu, the Purusha, the Yajna Purush, the lord of the Yajna, who's receiving the offerings through the hand of the wife of Agni Devi, Swaha, and then Agni Devi, and everything is offered from the demigods, from the devotee to the demigods, and it's offered to Vishnu, and he accepts the offerings in the fire. That dog eater, that bhakti is so powerful that he could even do that. He could even sit there and do a fire Yajna. However, still, So the verse is trying to tell you, this is how powerful bhakti is. What that means is, once this dog eater becomes a Vaishnava, no one should think, "Oh, you're a dog eater, and don't touch me." No, you're not. You're purified now. That contamination of that prabdha, that contamination of your prabdha, of your karma that's fructifying in this life, which gave you a low birth, that's finished now. Now you can take prasadam and you can sit down and you can honor prasadam, do so many things. You come in the temple and take darshan of the Lord. And the previously Asia's dog eater wasn't allowed in the temple. So he'll be accepted. He'll be accepted among the Vaishnava Samaj. That, yes, you were a dog eater. Now you're one of us. You're a Vaishnava. You can take prasad with us. You can hear the Harikata. You can attend the functions. You can go to the Janmashtami celebration. But to do a Vedic yajna, Although you're that qualified and that pure, still, this you must go through the process. You must, this prarabdha must finish in one sense. You must die. Although, now you're a Vaishnava, you may, you'll become perfect. You can become a perfect Vaishnava and get liberated. And forget about taking birth again to be a Brahmin and do a yajna. Because now you have bhakti, you can get perfection from any position. But this verse is, the main point of this verse, he's trying to show that bhakti destroys prarabdha, which is the point that Rupa Goswami is telling here. That not only aparabdha, those reactions which are not even going to happen in this lifetime, but even reactions that are happening right now become destroyed by bhakti. This is the basic point. Not that, I take this verse, now I'm doing yajna. So this is, therefore, what has been stated in this verse by Kapila Muni is that the process of hearing, chanting, and remembering has the power to elevate even a dog eater by eradicating his prarabdha karmas. What then must be the power of seeing the Lord directly? What then must be the elevation of other persons who are not born so low? Like if a dog eater, he can become, he's so purified by bhakti, that all his prarabdha is eliminated, it becomes like a Brahmin, a Vedic Brahmin, qualified to be a Vedic Brahmin, which means that if he doesn't attain perfection in next life, when he dies as a so-called dog eater, he'll be born in a Brahmin family. Because if you only follow Varnashram Dharma, if you follow the laws of Varnashram Dharma, which is all this karma and homa, without actually worshipping Vishnu directly, as he's saying, becoming a devotee, then the Sudra will become, if someone's a Chandala, then next life he'll become a Shudra. Then next life, it goes up like this. But the person who's surrendered to Krishna is actually performing bhakti directly to Krishna, then his whole prarabdha becomes eliminated. So one life, Chandala, which is fifth class, next life you go to first class. So powerful. It's like not even having an airline ticket and then getting a executive, business, class, or, first class seating. Someone says, oh, how are you going to Russia? Oh, I'm going to walk. No, here, take a jet plane. So this is the power of bhakti. What did he say? So what to speak? If someone is a Brahmin and then he becomes a Vaishnava, he may be a smarta Brahmin, whatever, but he becomes a Vaishnava, Krishna Bhakta, then what kind of elevation is he going to get? He's going to realize his, attain perfection and take not another birth very easily. Bhakti puna. Then it says this: the purpose of this verse is not to advocate that the dog eater has a qualification to immediately perform Vedic sacrifices. Similar statements are found elsewhere. This is in 11th canto. Actually, I wanted to read this from the Bhagavatam, but I forgot to bring it. Bhakti punati man nishta shwa pakan api sambhavat. Devotional service fixed on me is bhakti man nishta, that the mind is fixed, nishta. Fixed on me purifies even the dog eaters from the contamination of their low birth. Shwapaka means dog eater. Sambhavat. Punati means purify. So there, sambhav, it gets purified. This is in 11th canto. This is Uddhava Gita, Krishna teaching Uddhava. Before it was Kapila Muni's teachings. So here is another verse which, for praman, or shastric evidence, to prove the point that Rupa Goswami is making, that bhakti is so powerful that one of the characteristics that happens in the level of sadhana bhakti is kleshagni, destroying suffering. And suffering is caused by sins and avidya, rag dvesh, avidya, asmita, and abhinivesh. These different contaminations, which are basically due to ignorance. Because we get transcendental knowledge, and when we're fixed in transcendental knowledge, there's no ignorance. Ignorance means we don't know who we are. Knowledge means I know who I am. Krishna is God, I'm his part and parcel, and my duty is to serve him. That's knowledge in its most basic form. And when we act in that knowledge, there's no sin. And whatever sin is remaining, or we've, as you can say, in our hearts from previous lives, is very quickly eliminated just by the process of bhakti. There's a difference . This is in this is a commentary here. This is from Ban Maharaj. Of course, I basically said it. There's a difference between the two commentaries. Because Jiva Goswami, he wrote 500 years ago his commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he was extremely conservative because the times were conservative. And as you know, as time goes on, as time marches on in Kali Yuga, things become more and more degraded. I won't say liberal, I'll say degraded. Conservative means more orthodox and correct to the Vedic standard. Now things become more degraded and completely deviated from the Vedic standard, such that anybody can do anything. Here's the difference between Jiva Goswami and Vishnu's commentary. According to Sri Jiva Goswami, though this rudimentary bhakti in a born chandala, in other words, even this is called sadhana bhakti, someone begins vaidhi sadhana as a chandala, dog eater, this will remove the effects of his past misdeeds, yet he must wait for the next birth in a higher social status to qualify himself for the performance of Vedic sacrifices. Jiva Goswami is reluctant to disturb the social order, and he tries as far as possible to conform to the existing practices and ideas of the Hindu society of his time, 500 years ago. As they say, when in Rome, do as the Romans. Vishnu Chakravarti, however, who wrote his commentary in 1700s, 300 years ago, he considers Jiva Goswami's view to give away the whole case for the quality of Prarabdha Papaharatva that is claimed for bhakti. In other words, that bhakti completely takes away all sinful effects of sin. Vishwanath's view is that bhakti, however slight, will even small performance, will at once remove all taints or all contamination from the fallen human being and qualify him for the highest social duties of the Hindus. This is a rather controversial problem. The question is between eligibility and capability. A Brahmin born in a higher social order because of good deeds in previous births is eligible to perform Vedic rituals. While even a chandala born in the lowest social order, owing to his misdeeds, he becomes fully capable of performing such Vedic Soma Yajna when his Prarabdha is wiped out by hearing and chanting about Krishna in the stages of sadhana bhakti. But, so he's eligible. You can say, what does he say? He's capable, but not eligible. But even a person born in a Brahmin family has to wait till a second thread ceremony before he can actually perform Vedic rituals, in spite of his eligibility as born in a Brahmin family owing to his good deeds in previous birth. So also a devotee born in a chandala family is cleansed of his sins committed in previous births by performing sadhana bhakti and becomes eligible to perform Vedic rites. But he does not do this because he's not interested in the fruits of Vedic karma. That's very interesting. This is the difference of Vishnu. Jiva Goswami says he becomes purified and becomes like a Brahmin, but he's not eligible until he gets the adhikar or qualification of taking Brahmin birth in next life. But Vishnu says that bhakti actually makes him fully qualified. He doesn't have to take another birth. But he's not interested. The devotee, the chandala who becomes a devotee, Krishna Bhakta, he's not interested in doing Soma Yajna or any kind of yajnas of the Vedic standard. There's no need, because he's not trying to attain anything in the field of karma. Because all this karma kanda, or all this activities, have a peaceful home or this or that. He said, Krishna, you want my home to be a tornado or a cyclone every day? Fine. I'll just chant more. I'll just really have to chant. So he's not interested in doing any of these Vedic rituals. And certainly he wouldn't take, even he says, look, I'm a Vaishnav Brahmin. My guru has given me a Brahmin thread. I was a Chandala, but now I'm a Brahmin. I can do all these yagyas. And even by Guru Kripa, maybe he could memorize the Sanskrit and everything is possible. By the mercy of the Lord, as we said, Mukha Kavitakari. So, but he chooses, he says, why should I involve myself in doing these yagyas for someone else? Why should I waste my time and perpetuate their interest, their attachment to the karmic cycle of karmakanda? I'll spend my time preaching Vedic Dharma or the Sanatan Dharma in Gaudiya Vedanta. If they say, oh, please come and do a yagya, I say, I won't do a yagya, but I'll come and do Nam Yagya. I'll come and do Sankirtan in your house, which is the best form of yagya, and I'll preach Harikata, which is the best thing that could ever happen to you. Whether your house becomes peaceful or not, their house will become peaceful because peace depends on the state of mind of the people in the house. So if you change their minds or change their attitudes by giving them bhakti, then they'll become peaceful because this is a byproduct of devotion. When you become devoted, you become peaceful. And moreover, people do all these shanti homes all the time. It doesn't do a damn thing. It doesn't do anything. First of all, they don't even use cow's ghee. So there's all kinds of dravya dosh because they use some buffalo ghee, some white, you know. Anyway. But the point in hand is that Vishnath is saying, he can do, but he chooses not to. It's very interesting. So now we don't, because like you see, even Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was also living at the time of Jiva Goswami, and he was thinking how to deal with the Gaudiya Vaishnava movement, because Lord Chaitanya is Kiva Vipra Kivinasi Sutra Kenanai, He said, if someone actually knows the science of Krishna consciousness, he can become guru. So this verse was spoken by Mahaprabhu. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was actually, although Jiva was establishing Siddhanta and Tattva, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was writing practical books, like how to implement the theory of the principles. So he wrote Samskara Deepika and Satkriya Sara Deepika, and he did all the research for Hari Bhakti Vilas. He was a researcher, and Sanatana Goswami was selecting what he... Gopal Bhatta Goswami was providing all the information because he knew it by heart practically. He had so much experience as being a Sri Ranga Brahmin from birth. So he was very experienced and learned in all these things. And so he presented all the information, and then Sanatana Goswami edited. He did the editing and writing. So the authorship of Hari Bhakti Vilas is attributed generally to Sanatana Goswami, although sometimes it's given dual authorship, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, because it's like a cooperation project. So Gopal Bhatta, he was trying to make all this realistic. So he, in his Satkriya Saradipika and Samskaradipika, he explained how do Gaudiya Vaishnavas observe these Vedic rituals so that they could be accepted in the society. Otherwise, they would look at the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and say, what is this? You people are married, you don't do anything, you just get married and chant Hari Bol, Hari Bol. I mean, there's no homa, there's no samskaras. What is this? You're just flaunting the Vedic Dharma in the name of Mahaprabhu. So then he introduced the Gaudiya Vedanta approach, the Gaudiya Vedanta practice of the samskaras. That's called Samskara Deepika. For example, we also do we do Shrad or Pind, which is a samskara, or it's a Vedic ritual to benefit the deceased relatives that may be lingering around Yamapuri or whatever. It's called Pitri Loka or Yamapuri. And they're suffering, so then they offer food to them. And there's all these elaborate rituals. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who knew all the elaborate rituals, Vedic rituals, he said, for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, initiated Brahmins or whomever, we observe this function, but like this. We invite Gaudiya Vaishnavas into the house. We ask them to perform Nam Sankirtan. And then we make an offering of Krishna, bhog to Krishna, our Krishna deity. And then we offer the remnants to the Brahmins, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas that we've invited. And then the Brahmins or whatever, we just offer to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And we offer a plate of prasad, Mahaprasad, to a picture of our father and mother. And that, and then we ask all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, please say a prayer for my mother and father that, you know, that they can chant and dance in ecstasy and dance their way out of Pitri Loka and come back and take birth in Mahaprabhu's movement. And that's it. Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Yeah, then the feast is over and you go home. And you give them 5 rupees and everything's nice. You give everybody 5 rupees. That's, but if you look at the Shraddh ceremony, the Vedic Shraddh ceremony is, oh, so much ritual and this and that and all kinds of paraphernalia and coconuts and this and all kinds of things all around the place, you know. So Gopal Bhatti is a pakka Brahmin from Sri Rangamani, and he's giving, he says, for us, this is what we do. This is sufficient, right? So he simplified the thing. So this is, on the other hand, if the meaning can be construed, he becomes worthy of such respect, then the very purpose of Prabdhaharatvam is lost in the case of the Chandala. The truth is that a Chandala, once he's initiated as a Gaudiya Vaishnava, he is no more a Chandala when he takes up the path of bhakti. He becomes eligible to worship the Lord in the temple, in Archan. What to speak of Vedic karmas? So this is the conclusion of Vishwanath. He says he can even... That's what I was saying earlier that you may have remember. That Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he would initiate people and give them Brahman thread and said, yes, you can do the puja. But still, he was feeling maybe nervous or whatever about the social climate in the 1920s, that when it came to actual Vedic yajnas, any of the samskara functions, dasavita samskaras, or the pranpratishtha of Thakurji, or the installation of a temple, he would have his Brahman-born Gaudiya Vaishnava disciples do those functions. But Vishnath is saying that because of this quality of Parabdha Haratvam, Parabdha Papa Haratvam, that the Parabdha, the sins that are in effect right now, that have given us a low birth or high birth or whatever, that they are, those sins are Haratvam. They are fully taken away by following the practice of Sadhana Bhakti. After you take initiation, follow Sadhana Bhakti. And Vishwanath says that that person, even a dog eater, Chandala, becomes so qualified that he can do the Vedic karmas, which means the rituals of the Vedic society. But he said earlier that he's not interested in it. He's not interested in those things. Because he says that a Vaishnava is not interested in the fruits of Vedic karma. So why do people do all these Vedic yajnas? Because they want something. Right? You do, it's cause and effect. You do all these Vedic yajnas because you want health, you want happiness, you want money, you want a husband, a wife, this, that, beautiful wife. There's so many different devas and devis you can worship because you want something. But a devotee is nishkam. A bhakti is nishkam. What does he want? Bhakti. And what is he doing? Bhakti. So why do I have to do a yajna to get bhakti? Because I already have bhakti. I just do more bhakti. I chant the holy name, I read, I do my puja, and bas, finished. I have no interest in the Vedic yajnas. So that's why he says, although the dog eater, he is fully qualified. It says he's not interested in the fruits of Vedic karma. The only fruit we're interested in is called prem phal, the fruit of Krishna prem. And how do we get that? By chanting Hare Krishna. Not by swaha, swaha. You know, we don't have to do that. We have to do Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Right? Swaha. It's a great show, it's a lot of fun, and it looks like something's really happening. Because because it looks like something's happening, then you think, something's happening. But when you see a devotee, he's just sitting there, his eyes are closed, it looks like he's doing nothing. Of course, some devotees are doing nothing. Of course, they're also doing something. Because even with their eyes closed, and they're sleeping, that sleeping is only to get energy so they can chant when they wake up. So although they're sitting down on the pretext, they're sitting down to chat and absorb themselves in Nam Rup Gun and Leela. That's seva, that's bhakti, that will make them pure and give them eternal life in the spiritual world. Forget about going to Swarga or any kind of limited fruits of the Vedic Dharma, of this Vedic Dharma. That will give them that. So that occasionally they may fall asleep while they're chanting, but then that's also bhakti. Because they're only sleeping because they're tired. And when they get some energy from sleeping, when they wake up, what will they do? Oh, I have this energy. Let's play football. No. I have this energy. Oh, now I better finish. Oh my God, it's an hour. I better finish my rounds. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And he gets to it. So at every, whether he's sleeping or whether he's waking, he's doing bhakti. So he has no interest in anything else. Krishna bhakti nishkam ateva shantam. He's, but this bhukti mukti siddhi kami, we heard this verse before. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. Krishna bhakti nishkam ateva shanta. Ateva means, indeed, certainly, surely, he is peaceful. Because he has no desire. Desire agitates the mind. I want this, I want that. I have to have this, and I have to have that, and then I have this, and then I have, oh, I got this, but then there's an adapter you can get, and then I have to get the adapter. But then I have to get the adapter for the adapter. And then I have version 1.2, but I have to get a version 1.3, and then 1.4, and 5, and 6. And then new, improved. And so this way, advertisement just agitates our mind unlimitedly. You have Adobe PageMaker 5. Oh, you're out of it, man. But with this Adobe PageMaker 5, I laid out 3,000 books. I know, you did. But now it's Adobe PageMaker 7. So unless you get PageMaker 7, how will you lay out a book? Oh yeah, how will I lay a book? So then he goes and pays $150 and gets Adobe 7. And he doesn't think, well, wait a minute. I already laid out 3,000 books. Why do I have to, why can't I do continue with the same program and lay out and design another 3,000 books for publishing? But the advertisement and your friends, oh, you square, you're weird, you know. It has all these good features, you know, it talks to you and puts you to sleep and, you know, sings lullabies and, you know. And if you don't have that, you're really not with it, you know. And then you meet your friends. So everything is all about ego. We have to keep our ego happy. So when our friends say, okay, what kind of computer you have? Oh, I have a 1 gigabyte computer, you know. 1 gigabyte? Well, you're really out of it, you know. You have to have 3,000 gigabytes, 7,000 megahertz, you know. Yeah, when you press the button, it flies around the room and comes back, you know. You press the button, it flies around the room and lands back on the table, you know. It can't be just a regular computer, it's got to do tricks, you know. Apple tricks. Didn't you get, you know, there's a new computer called Apple Tricks. It levitates, it stands on its head. You didn't see it? Apple Tricks? So this way people's minds are always agitated. Manda sumanda matiyo, manda abhagyu padruta, yupadruta. Always disturbed. So this is our good fortune of being born in Kali Yuga. So I'll stop there. Is there any questions or comments? Yes. Yes. Yeah, I think, well, the truth, you have, if you see what they're both, basically they're both saying, the truth that they're saying is the same, but truth has to be applied according to time, place, and circumstance. And certainly we're a follower of the six Goswamis, but also their immediate predecessors, and also our parampara. And things can be adjusted. It's what we call principle and detail. And we have to have some good intelligence to trace out the transparency of the principle. The principle remains transparent as long as we have the intelligence to perceive it. And that's the role of Vaishnavas and Guru, to give us that transparent, or that discretion, that fine intelligence to find the principle. The detail will change, but the principle is Nam Sankirtan. That in Kali Yuga, the best way to attain perfection is Nam Sankirtan. That's the principle. The guru may examine the disciple and say, listen, I think you can handle Nam Sankirtan to the extent of one round a day. You can chant one round of japa. So now another guru, he examines his new candidate or new follower or disciple. He says, I think you can chant 64 rounds a day. You can handle it. You have the adhikar. You have the peacefulness of mind and purity of heart to be able to chant from day one 64 rounds. So the detail is different, but they're not changing the principle. So Vishwanath and Jiva Goswami, in regard to this point that Rupa Goswami is introducing, that bhakti, and he's introduced it, and then he's spoken in his own words, that bhakti has six characteristics. And the first two are Shubhada and Kleshagni. And to explain Kleshagni, or the removal of suffering, he says that bhakti removes not only aparabdha, kutam and bijam, but also parabdha, which is quite amazing, because that's what's happening right now. And this is not told anywhere. Not in Sankhya, or in yoga, or in even other... Well, it can be. It depends on how much they understand the Shastra. But even other Vaishnava traditions, they generally don't say that bhakti will destroy parabdha. Even there's whole discussions even amongst Vaishnava Sampradaya about this issue about bhakti destroying parabdha. So he's saying this. Then he cites verses from Bhagavatam, Kapila Shiksha and Uddhava Shiksha, to prove his point from the words of Krishna himself to Uddhava, and Krishna's Shaktivesh avatar Kapila to Devahuti. Now, Jiva Goswami, he's also agreeing, yes, bhakti will destroy the parabdha of a dog eater. But this is a detail. He's saying that he has the he could perform Vedic sacrifices, but Jiva's also saying that he's not interested, and moreover, he's not interested. Jiva's saying that the Vaishnav Chandala, Gaudiya Vaishnav Chandala, although he's eligible and qualified and purified enough by that bhakti, he's not interested in performing any of these karmakanda Vedic yagyas, and moreover, the society is such that if he was, although he's qualified, if he was to do it, he would be murdered. So therefore, to prevent all the devotees from getting slaughtered, Jiva Goswami is explaining, so listen everybody, although you're qualified, just relax. You know, in next life, if you take another, of course they won't even take another birth if they become perfect in bhakti. But if you want to actually do a Vedic yagya, you should wait and follow the Vedic system, the Varnashram system, because Brahmins are entitled, according to the Varnashram system, to do yagyas. They do the yagyas on behalf, although a Vaishya or a Kshatriya may take Brahmin initiation, Upanayanam, they do not do the yagyas. As you read throughout all Vedic history, some Brahmin comes in and does the big pujas and yagyas for Yudhisthira or for whatever. They don't do the yagyas, the Brahmins. That's their birthright. As long as they're initiated, Upanayanam. That's their duty in Varnashram system, and no one else's duty. So if you violate your duty, then that's pop. So it's just a detail, and the Vishnath is saying, well, listen, everyone. Times are changing, as they say, and society is a little more open minded. So listen, Chandalas. Listen, Vaishnav Chandalas or whatever. Of course, he wouldn't say like that, because they wouldn't. They don't. We don't say Russian devotees and American devotees, although we do it. But like, devotee's a devotee, and we all that jati is given up. We try to see equally, but still we say, oh, the Russian devotees sit here, the American devotees. Anyway, that's just for some managerial thing. But like, spiritually, a devotee's a devotee. Doesn't matter his birthplace. Oh, he's a Russian devotee. Oh, Russian devotee. They're weird. I mean, don't touch them. You know, we're French devotees. We're like good, you know. I know we're Indian devotees. You know, these are, we're Deshi, you know, we're like Deshi devotees. We're better. These are Videshi. They're devotees, but Videshi devotees. This goes on because of impurity of mind. But proper Siddhanta, and the truth is that devotee is devotee. Bhagavan is one, and the devotees are also all equal. So Vishwanath, he's saying that, listen, devotees, then you become totally pure, and you're also not interested in performing these Vedic karmas. But if you want to, you can. That's really all. That's all the difference in the two viewpoints. And taking Vishwanath, and so some devotees that have some interest for some reason or other, some Gaudiya Vaishnava devotees have some interest in performing these yagyas. Maybe they can't find any Brahmins around or whatever. They can take encouragement from Vishnu's purport that here's a Mahajan, a Gaudiya Vaishnava Mahajan, who is reputed and accepted across the board as an authority of Siddhanta and philosophy for the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And he's saying it's okay that if I do yagyas, so therefore I can do. This is what the way I understand it. But because you also see, sometimes people see when Jiva Goswami is talking about Swakiya and Parakiya, sometimes Jiva Goswami is saying that Radha and Krishna actually married the Swakiya. And he does this because the people of that time, 500 years ago, they can't conceive that someone is not, that Krishna is not married to Radharani, and that that someone's running around with some girl in the forest, and what is this? And nowadays, what's the big deal? I mean, 500 years later, we can't think that this is a Swakiya, Parakiya. What, wife swapping? I mean, we go to parties. I go with my wife, and I come home with somebody else's wife, and you go home with my wife, and then the next week we change back, and this is going on. This is so commonplace that no one's going to raise. You say, oh, Krishna, hey, he's cool. He's just like us. Because, we've all became like Krishna or something in Kali Yuga. But 500 years ago, people would say, what are you, go to your Vaishnava. You're supposed to establish the Siddhanta. So actually, when you read the commentaries of Jiva Goswami, he seems to be indicating that Krishna's relationship with the gopis was Swakiya. But even commentaries who comment on Jiva Goswami saying he's actually hiding it, because it's all spoken in Sanskrit. So for the superficial reader of Sanskrit 500 years ago, see, look, even the Gaudiyas are okay. These guys are okay. We all believe, because everybody believes from Garga Samhita and Brahma Vaivart Puran, they're telling about the marriage of Radha and Krishna, and Brahma came down. But the Gaudiya's conception, this is a play. It's like a play. Oh, let's play. Like, you dress up as a girl, and I'll be your husband, and you do. So, okay. And everybody knows he's not a girl, he's a boy, and he's not my wife. But it's a play. It's a play. So the Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary in the Brahma Vaivart Puran and Garga Samhita, it was a play that they just said, they had fun. And they were always doing this anyway. So Brahma once was watching them and said, let me come down. They want to do a marriage. So when Bandiravan Vrindavan, Lord Brahma came down and chanted some mantras. So our understanding of this, it preserves the Swakiya aspect, Parakiya aspect. The Radha and Krishna are not married, and they're relishing this relationship of paramour love. Although they're eternally, they're Krishna, Radha is part of Krishna, there's no difference. But Jiva Goswami spoke the Sanskrit in such a way, actually they're married, and it's Swakiya, and everything is above the board, and everything is legal. But if you read the Sanskrit, the commentaries on explaining Jiva Goswami is actually supporting Parakiya Vad, or Parakiya, that Radha and Krishna are not married, and that's really the intention. Because that's Jiva Goswami's belief. He's a Vilas Manjari. He knows who Radharani is. He's not bewildered. He's not in confusion. He is personally not an advocate of Swakiya Vad, which means Swakiya means belonging to me. My wife belongs to me. My husband belongs to me. It's called Swakiya, my own. And Parakiya means belonging to another. Parakiya. He personally is an advocate, but he wants to keep the peace because he was the. You have to understand that Jiva Goswami was the prime minister of philosophy. What the ministers say is important, but what the prime minister says is most important. So in the viewpoint of all their Vaishnava, the Char Sampradaya, when they were looking at the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, who is your representative? Like all the prime ministers of the world, they look at India and say, who's in charge of this crazy country? Is anybody a spokesman? Oh, I am. Well, who are you? I'm the prime minister. Okay, what do you people have to say? Are you going to take away nuclear disarmament? Or are you going to make stockpile nuclear? Somebody has to speak. So the spokesman for the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is Jiva Goswami. He was appointed by Mahaprabhu. Because Rupa and others, they were writing the actual books of practice for the devotees. But to establish the Siddhanta, the Gaudiya Vedanta, for the entire world of Vaishnavas, that was Jiva Goswami's work. That's why he wrote the Sandarvas. But for those that are practicing, Rupa Goswami didn't write these kind of books. He wrote books on how to practice, how to get prem. Raghunath Das wrote how to practice, how to get prem. Sadhana and Prayojana or rather Abhideya and Prayojana. But the Sambandhacharya is Sanatana Goswami and Jiva Goswami. Of course, they wrote on everything. I mean, but the main prime minister, because he continued to live. He was a young man when he came to Vrindavan. Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they passed on. They left this world. And Jiva Goswami, he maintained all their temples. He did so much. He was a leader. He was a Shiksha Guru for all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And he was the representative and spokesman to the whole subcontinent of India. What is Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, all about? So he had a big responsibility on his head. So he did it in this way. Anything else? It's like, so we have class tomorrow again. Jai Shri Radhe.